Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 17, 2015. A South Sudanese bishop is calling on President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to end the fighting in the country now.
Let this war stop, because none of politicians is die. The innocent people and the women and the children and the disabled people, they are the ones dying.
And opposition lawmakers expressed disappointment over the controversial security bill, which has become a law without President Kiir's signature.
We are going back to square one of the time when we were in Khartoum, when the security used to arrest people in the ghost houses, and some of them disappear or some of them are tortured. So that is my concern.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But first we go to Addis Ababa. The African Union says a document circulated 10 days ago is not its Commission of Inquiry report into human rights abuses in South Sudan. The document, leaked during peace talks for South Sudan, calls, among other things, for President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to be excluded from an interim government in South Sudan. In a statement released late yesterday, African Union Commission Chairperson Hlozana Dlamini Zuma says the real Commission of Inquiry report has not been released to anyone, although she did not dispute any details in the leaked document. Zuma says the report was only submitted to the African Union Peace and Security Council at the end of January and members are studying it. But that timeline does not sit well with what the South Sudan Law Society, Amnesty International, South Sudanese NGOs and the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization and numerous other human rights and peace-building organizations have said about the report. They say in a separate statement released in January that the Commission of Inquiry, led by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, submitted its final report to the African Union Peace and Security Commission in October last year. The African Union then had 3 months to deliberate over the report before making it public at the African Union Summit at the end of January. But publication of the report was put on indefinite hold at the last minute. Some South Sudanese analysts have dismissed the legitimacy of the leaked document and question its value. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan is warning that the country, which so many had high hopes for just 3.5 years ago, might be headed for economic collapse. And Toby Lancer says the government's attempt to improve the situation by printing money could make the situation worse. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Lanza told a news conference that he is deeply disappointed that more than a year of peace talks have yielded little for South Sudan.
I think it's a very sad situation in South Sudan. This is a country that should be prospering and growing and saving and building. But instead, it's a country which is deeply troubled, which is accumulating debt, which cannot invest. It's in a very difficult space. And it will make the future even harder for the people of this country.
Lanza says government revenues, which come almost exclusively from oil, have fallen sharply. He blames that on the conflict and the fall in the price of oil.
I'm worried because income from the petroleum sector used to account for 98% of the total income. Well, that income has gone down by 75%. Because production has gone down by half, and at the same time, the oil price has gone down by half. So what the state of South Sudan receives in petroleum industry receipts is down by 75%.
Lanza says the sharp drop in oil revenues is making it difficult for the government to pay bills and civil servants' salaries. He says the government appears to be trying to turn the economy around by printing more money.
All I know is what we've been told, and the former finance minister, Agre Tisa, did brief the diplomatic corps in December and stated that printing of money was underway.
But Lanza says taking that route will likely result in other more serious problems.
Printing money when there's nothing to back the value of that currency usually leads to hyperinflation. And if that were to occur in South Sudan, on top of the crisis which has afflicted people's lives here during the last 15 months, we would be in an ever more grave situation. And the people who have managed to eke out a living so far despite the crisis would also be added to those terrible numbers that I quoted earlier.
The UN says the fighting in South Sudan has left 2.5 million people severely food insecure. Lanza says the UN World Food Programme is working to pre-position relief items, including food, near areas where aid is needed before the rainy season makes roads impassable.
For the next 3 months, until the middle of June, we will be trying to deliver 300,000 metric tons of relief items to different locations throughout South Sudan for the people of this country.
Repeated calls to Information Minister Michael Makuei and Presidential Advisor on the Economy, Agretisa Sabuni, for comment on how the government is trying to get the economy back on track went unanswered. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
The head of a parliamentary committee is saying that South Sudan's controversial national security bill has passed into law because President Kiir took too long to sign it. The lawmaker says the National Assembly passed the bill in October and sent it to Mr. Kiir. He says the president and his advisers studied the bill for more than the 33 days allowed by South Sudan's constitution. But presidential spokesman Ateng Wek Ateng said last year that the bill only landed on Mr. Kiir's desk on November 21st. And he sent it back to the parliament for further debate on December 19th. That makes 29 days, meaning Mr. Kiir has not missed any deadline. Awan Riak, the minister in the office of the president, also told South Sudan in Focus during a trip to Washington that Mr. Kiir only received the bill in late November. Philip Tonaleu spoke with the lawmaker who insists the bill is now law and another who says Mr. Kiir should have vetoed it.
Samuel Duruayeding, the chairperson of the Parliamentary Defense and Security Committee, says President Kiir missed the deadline. So according to Article 85 of the South Sudan's transitional constitution, the security bill has been the law of the land for several months now. He says it was returned by President Kiir to Parliament in November.
The bill came from the office of the President with observation that have been mentioned by the President. These are the observation on the bill that he thinks the Parliament should sit and reconsider and then pass it into provisions. But when we saw the time that the bill is spent in the office of the President has got that legal implications, we say the bill, to this stage we are sorry, the bill has already become a law, it is 3 days.
Article 85 of the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan 2011 says, quote, any bill approved by the national legislature shall not become a law unless the president assents to it and signs it into law, unquote. But the second paragraph says, quote, if the president withholds assent for 30 days without giving reasons, the bill shall be deemed to have been signed, unquote. Duruai says the president was too late. Onyoti Adigo, the leader of the minority party SPLM for Democratic Change, or SPLMDC, says he is disappointed the bill has become law. Adigo agrees with the explanation provided by the ruling party, but says the government has retreated from the principles it once fought for.
We are going back to square one of the time when we were in Khartoum, when the security used to arrest people in the ghost houses, and some of them disappear or some of them are tortured. So that is my concern.
Adigo says the new law allows security agents to arrest and detain suspects, monitor communications, conduct searches and seize property. Adigo accuses the Parliamentary Defense and Security Committee of not telling the truth about what would have happened with the bill.
Did the office of the president not know that it has become a law? Or are those who are advising the office of the president, they don't know their functions? Or maybe there is a a play, something which is witty between the office of the president and the leadership.
Drouhi says Parliament passed the bill without violating any parliamentary procedure and rejects the accusations of the opposition leader.
That was not correct at all. This depend on how somebody reads that correspondence. But in actual fact, when we passed it here as assembly, what we did, our committee just sent it to, my limit is to the office of the speaker. My committee and the committee of legislation made a final report that was passed by the assembly, and we sent it to the office of the speaker. The speaker, then the clerk, sent it to the president.
Drouhi says his committee does not communicate directly with top officials in the Kiir administration. Adiko says the new law is a bad news for South Sudanese.
It is very unfortunate that this law, the government of South Sudan, plus some element that are interested in this law to become a law, and it has become a law now. So we pray that God will protect the people of South Sudan.
During the passage of the bill last October, opposition MPs and several representatives from the three equatorial states of Central, Western and Eastern walked out during the debate, causing considerable confusion. When the bill passed, Daniel Bekele, Africa Director at Human Rights Watch, said, quote, "The scope of the powers granted to the NSS flies in the face of international norms and South Sudan's own constitution." Instead, he added, "The bill grants security officers wide powers without judicial oversight or clear limits on when they can use force." For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Attempts to reach Mr. Kiir's spokesman, Ateny Wek Ateny, and the minister in the office of the president, Awan Riek, for comments were unsuccessful. South Sudan Army says today that dozens of soldiers have been killed in Upper Nile State after a fierce battle between government forces and rebels linked to former Vice President Riek Machar. South Sudan's military spokesman, Colonel Philip Aguer, says a fierce two-day clash, which ended yesterday between the government and the rebels, has left dozens of soldiers dead on both sides in Manyo County of Upper Nile. He says several weapons were captured from the rebels, including a tank.
The last fighting was yesterday, noon hours, in which the rebels lost 130 of their soldiers. The 130 dead bodies were counted on the trenches, in front of the trenches. The SPLA lost 14 killed in action and 17 wounded.
Peter Holt, Upper Nile State Information Minister, says the rebels started the fighting.
They were coming from North Sudan to attack the SPLA position in Wadakone. And before that, they met the SPLA force in that particular area. It's called Gabat.
The spokesperson for the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, Ariane Quinta, says there has been continuous fighting in the northern part of Upper Nile State. She says that as of yesterday, the UNMISS team stationed in Reng County of Upper Nile State could hear sound of gunfire and shelling, but did not have any information as to what was happening on the ground.
We can confirm that this fighting is following an SPLA offensive last week in and around Wad Dakona,
yeah,
which is a few kilometers south of Reng, and then the fighting moved to the north. And we are not in a position to confirm either movements or casualties on the ground.
SPLM in opposition military spokesperson Colonel James Long says they are still in control of areas in Upper Nile State, although fighting is continuing.
What happened is that actually when they made the first offensive, we withdrew from Wadakona to Gabat and to Mustakbel. But we started offensive against them, and we have captured a load of ammunition, and we have four casualties against them. And we have even captured some officers alive. It is actually yesterday that we fought with them up to the evening time. And today we are controlling most of our areas, and we are in offensive. The government that is making an offensive against us, but we are trying to force a very severe resistance, and this is what we are doing.
Aguer says the SPLA have taken control of a town called Gabat from the rebels.
The rebels have run toward the Republic of Sudan, and possibly they are in a place called Kwek. That is the possible area of their current presence.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared this report from Juba. An Anglican bishop in South Sudan says the recent spate of fighting between government and rebel forces is affecting the livelihood of people in Upper Nile. Bishop of Reng Diocese, Joseph Garang Atem, is calling on the warring parties to stop the fighting once and for all. Garang blames the rebels of the SPLM in opposition for attacking government positions in the most recent fighting.
Yesterday there was another fighting because the rebels, they went and organized themselves and they came back to attack north of Wedakona. But also they had been defeated. But inside town, that is it, across the Nile, which is called Manyo County, which is called Wedakona in other words. And Reng is okay. People are coming back from different places, from Sudan, from Juba, from wherever.
And what is the impact of this fighting on life in Upper Nile, specifically among, you know, you deal with a lot of people as a church. What is the impact of this fighting on the common man, on women?
You know, it's a kind of disaster for the people. Innocent people are dying. Even they do not know what they're dying for. And you know, when the shelling comes, you don't have chance in order to run away. But if they are coming by road or by vehicle, you may head and you may run away. But the shelling is too dangerous also, because it may come to your radio without knowing. So many of children, many of women, and all those are disabled. Many of them, they lost their lives. So that is what is happening, actually.
You were telling me that the rebels are trying to attack several locations around Upper Nile. But it takes two people to fight, right? It takes the government and the rebels to fight. Is the government also attacking the rebel positions in those areas?
No, actually, because you know the things you cannot know at the base of the rebel. The rebel in Upper Nile, the place which I know very well, what is happening there, that is the rebel are the one attacking. And then the government respond back. And when they respond back, they run to Sudan border. And then the soldiers, they stop there. Then they recognize themselves and they came back again. This is what is happening all this year, almost a year. We in Reng, Northern Upper Nile, we are doing agriculture. They came, the rebel, and attacked the people in agriculture area, and they're looting their things, which create insecurity. And you know the border is too wide to be controlled.
Bishop, do you get an opportunity to speak to the leaders of the two warring parties, especially President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar? Have you ever spoken to them?
Myself, direct, no.
But if you get a chance to speak to them, what will you tell them?
Okay, you know, if I get the chance, I will tell them, let this war stop. Because none of politicians is die. The innocent people, and the women, and the children, and the disabled people, they are the one dying. Civilian, innocent people, they did not know what they are dying for. But the politicians are not dying. They are sitting in their hotel, they are sitting in their offices, nice houses, and other people are suffering. Even the soldiers, even the army are dying for what they do not, defending the country. But what a country, inside the people themselves, who is losing? South Sudan is the one losing.
And what is the church doing at this point to stop this war?
Church had been praying, church had been talking with many different people to let this war stop. But no people listen to the voice of the church.
That's Joseph Garang Atem, the Anglican Bishop of Reng Diocese in Upper Nile State. He was speaking to me from Nairobi earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Central Equatorial State Parliament is back in session, and the burning issue is not what you might think. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how should people treat refugees and those fleeing from their homes?
We should be welcoming to them. Like if someone comes from South Sudan to Uganda as a refugee, we should welcome them as our visitors, as our brothers and sisters, as our children, and we should not discriminate them as well. We stay with them as our neighbors, and then they will enjoy the environment with us.
For refugees' case, it's we. We supposed to welcome them, to give them hot welcoming, and provide them with some social needs.
We have to take them and introduce them in our community, because all of us, we are brother, and we have to consider them in our community.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about malaria. The World Health Organization has reported the number of malaria cases is declining dramatically in recent years. But a new study says malaria cases are not declining everywhere. For example, cases are increasing in parts of rural Uganda. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The study in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene calls for a more aggressive and sustained approach to malaria. Dr. Philip Rosenthal is one of the researchers.
Conducted surveillance at three sites in Uganda and showed over the last few years that the incidence of the disease has actually been increasing at two rural surveillance sites while it was decreasing at a more urban site.
Rosenthal is a professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco.
We know that overall reports from around the world have shown decreasing incidence of malaria, but we know that the incidence varies greatly around the world, and our results are representative of just one area, which is one of the most highly endemic countries for malaria in Africa, Uganda.
He says the increase in cases in rural areas came despite the recommended response.
As is the case for all countries in Africa, Uganda uses the newer recommended regimens to treat malaria. Those are called artemisinin-based combination therapies. And those are quite widely distributed. In addition, there has been quite heavy use of bed nets. I will mention that since this time of surveillance, the country has continued further rollout of bed nets. So the coverage in the country is increasing, and obviously that should help with control of malaria.
Dr. Rosenthal says it's going to take a while to see the full benefits of treatment and prevention in the hardest hit places.
Now, the increase is probably not the important message. The important message is the lack of a decrease. Malaria will vary from year to year due to many factors, some of which we understand, such as rainfall, and others which we don't understand. And so a year-to-year small variation is not worth taking too seriously. But the more important message is clearly it has not been going down over the last few years in these rural areas of Uganda.
He says bed nets, treatment, and the spraying of homes with insecticide are important methods for controlling malaria. But he adds the intensity of those efforts is vital, saying they must be more widespread and continuous.
It's not that difficult to get improvement with aggressive interventions in controlling mosquitoes, but it's hard to sustain those improvements. And further investment for sure would allow us to hit harder across Africa in bringing malaria down and also accomplishing what is more challenging, which is to keep it down.
He says sometimes aggressive approaches are only temporary and jump from region to region. That allows mosquitoes and breeding conditions to return to earlier levels. The Ugandan study does not recommend how much more money should be invested for a sustained and aggressive approach. The Roll Back Malaria campaign reports funding levels peaked at $1.5 billion a year around 2007. However, it says that's just one quarter of what's needed to achieve universal coverage. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move back to Juba. The Central Equatorial State Parliament returned from recess today. Beside the challenges posed by the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, State Governor Clement Wanikonga warned members that insecurity linked to cattle grazing issues have emerged as the main threat in the state since the start of the year and need serious attention from legislators. Waki Simon Wudu has this story for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan National Police Band performs a honorary tribute to Governor Clement Wanikonga as he arrives at the Central Equatorial State Parliament to reopen the legislative body's sixth session after a three-month recess. Konga told the lawmakers cattle keepers from Central Equatoria State and other states are making the state's insecurity even worse. He says the encroachment of cattle keepers and their huts into several parts of the state since the start of the year has provoked tensions, resulting in 23 senseless murders.
We need to show our people the culture of tolerance, respect and harmonious coexistence. The members of parliament should take the lead in this endeavor. I therefore call for proactive engagement to bring peace and harmony to our people and for us to lead with respect and responsibility.
Konga says his government is taking the necessary legal measures to ensure these crimes are not tolerated. He says Central Equatoria officials have formed a committee to investigate the incidents.
The state government has instituted mechanisms for resolving these problems. For example, for the incident of Tali, a special court has been constituted to try the culprits which were apprehended.
Some rack cattle keepers have been moving from Terkeka County in Central Equatoria State to other counties such as Yei, Juba, Lainya, and Kajukeji in search of green pasture. Konga says others came from Bor in Jonglei State. Naptali Hassan Gale is the speaker of the Central Equatoria State Assembly. Gale says the insecurity triggered by cattle encroachment does not equal the impact of day-to-day crimes in the state.
We're experiencing looting, rape, theft, murder that are being registered, and sometimes mysterious disappearance of people. As it inflicts fears in the minds of our people, it affects their daily business.
But Gale agrees with the reports confirmed by state officials of an influx of herders moving cattle from Jonglei State to Central Equatoria if authorities do not put a stop at the activity. Gale says, unfortunately, the herders are well armed.
In some areas where the cattle have already eaten down almost everything, like in Tijor, according to the reports we got, I don't think these people will be interested to go to cultivation now. Because if you work at the end of the year and everything you have is simply eaten off, it demoralizes people, it builds up resentment, and therefore something has to be done about this.
Conflicts related to cattle encroachment and rustling are widespread throughout South Sudan. Officials say the practice had not been a major issue in Central Equatoria State until recently. It remains to be seen whether state government efforts to begin dealing with the problem have been successful and whether attempts to interact with the cattle keepers to dissuade them from encroaching on land owned by others is having an impact. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And that report by Wudu marks the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song African Style by a musician who calls himself Kawaja Revolution.
Kawaja Revolution, yo. The mighty sun bandit dancer, African team song, yo.
I wanna dance, dance African style, yeah. And I'm an internal love deeper Africa.
We have been listening to Kawaja Revolution with the song African Style. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Hey, on, don't, on, on. Yo, yeah. Hey. African dance.
more west. Sweet African dance to Otama. And to do no Benin. Now, all of us are.